James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, glad to be back with you here on the Guy James Show, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. Glad to see you're all here today. All the folks at... Well, all the various websites that people let us know they're listening to the show from. Good folks over at Head On Radio Network chat room, I see, are active today. And Democratic Underground and the folks over at Democrats.com and iTunes and all those good folks. Thanks for being with us today and all of our friends overseas as well. Always interesting to hear from every single one of you. We'll try and have an interesting show for you today. We've got a follow-up on a story we did just a couple of weeks ago. You remember Joshua Kors and the story about specialist John Towne, who'd been denied benefits from the VA and all the sneaky things they'd done to him. Well, we're going to have a follow-up coming up at the bottom of the hour with Joshua, and it's a great story. I'm extremely pleased to be bringing you that follow-up today. I guess I don't have to tell a lot of you what the special significance of today is. It's the fourth anniversary of our esteemed president telling us that a mission was accomplished in Iraq. In whose opinion? I want to give you a few stats. On May 1st, 2003, there had been 542 soldiers and military personnel, U.S. military personnel, wounded in Iraq. Today, there have been 24,912. 4 years ago today, there were 139 tragically killed troops in the Iraq War, in the Bush War. Today, the figure stands at somewhere around 3,351. There have been 916 contractors killed, as opposed to 69 back then. Journalists and media assistants. 4 years ago today, there had been 11 killed. Today, there have been 167. There were 150,000 American forces in Iraq 4 years ago today. There still are 146,000 as of today. There were somewhere between 7,000 and 9,000 Iraqi security forces in those days 4 years ago. Now there are approximately 334,000. Has it made any difference? I don't think so. The number of insurgents, 4 years ago, they're estimated to be less than 5,000. Now they say there are at least 70,000 of Sunni alone. There were eight attacks a day, insurgent attacks average a day in those days. Now there are 148. We looked at a staggering bill 4 years ago of $79 billion, which far exceeded the predictions. And today that bill stands at $421 billion and about to approve some more. Bush's handling of the Iraq Bush war at that time, 75% approval rating. Now it's 24. The percentage of Americans who believe that the Iraq war was worth fighting, 70% in those days. Now it's 34, and you can guess who those 34 are. And Bush's overall job approval, 71% at that time, and now it's 32%. How'd you like to be at a meeting, a dinner, a convention, or whatever, with the 34% of the people who today still think that the Iraq war was worth fighting and that Bush's handling of the war is just fine, hunky-dory, just fine? How'd you like to be in a meeting with those folks? My God, that has to be a wild group, does it not? 4 years ago today, May 1st, 2003, and you all remember that carefully orchestrated photo op, Junior Bush landing aboard the USS Lincoln dressed in his little Ken doll full fighter gear. We remember hearing how they had to turn the ship because they didn't want the cameras to see and that it was close to San Diego, just offshore. They wanted us all to think it was way out to sea and that Bush would risk his life and limb to go there and meet the ship. Commander Codpiece, as they call him. Ah, yes, we all remember that, with his little helmet in his arm, wanting to remind us of his exploits of the Vietnam War, about how he was a much decorated pilot in the net. Well, I guess not much decorated. In fact, he never finished his duty. In fact, no one knows when the hell he was even there at the National Guard. He didn't report at the end. A lot of people weren't in, but they didn't go around bragging about it after it was over with and saying, you know, I was this hotshot pilot and all this. He would have had you thinking he was flying F-16s, and he wasn't. He was in what they call the Champagne Division of the Texas Air National Guard, which meant it was a bunch of little rich boys. They got to fly planes and do whatever the hell they wanted to, evidently. But that's another story. Standing under that banner 4 years ago, mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Remember how he bragged about that? Mission accomplished. He went on to say, in the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed. Au contraire, Mr. Bush. Unfortunately, his naive little bluster and overconfidence, all of that's been undermined by the, well, today's harsh reality of the facts on the ground. 4 years later, with 146,000 American soldiers stuck in the middle of Iraq's anarchic civil war, the Battle of Iraq rages on, and it has had deadly consequences, both in lives and in treasure, for this country of ours. Last month, 104 U.S. soldiers were killed in Iraq, making that the deadliest month so far this year, and the sixth deadliest month of the entire war. And the anniversary of this photo op comes as Bush continues to threaten to veto legislation passed by the Congress and supported by the majority of the American people that would set a timetable. A timetable. No exact dates, but an approximate timetable with some benchmarks in it that the Iraqis would have to achieve. And begin to bring an end to the war in Iraq. It's, you know, this is, we had an election in November, and all but the most, how can I say this and be kind, all but the most stupid people in the country understand that when Bush pulls out his veto pen and vetoes this bill that was sent to him to Congress, he knows damn well why that bill is coming to him. He knows for a fact that that bill is coming to him because the American people changed the Congress to have them send that bill to him. That bill is the wish of the American people. Make no mistake about that. That bill is absolutely the wish of the American people. There's no question about it. He knows that. Don't we all know that? And so when he pulls out his veto pen and vetoes that bill, that is an in-your-face rebuke of the wishes of the American people. He isn't just telling Congress where to stick it. He's telling the American people he doesn't give a damn what they think. Imagine that. The President of the United States doesn't give a damn what the people of the United States want. He knows what they voted in last fall. He knows the reason for this bill coming to him. And he's just looking at the American public right in the eye and saying, shove it, folks. I don't care what you think because I am George W. Bush. I know better than what you do. It's really criminal. You know, Georgie, you claim to be from Texas, so you probably played a bit of poker in your life, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a poker player myself, but I do know a successful player that plays poker, knows when to hold them and knows when to fold them. Maybe it's time to fold them and get out. The public thinks so. The Congress thinks so. But oh no. Georgie Bush knows better than everybody. Yes, he does. And we heard over the weekend, Jack Murtha mentioned the I word, the impeachment word. And you know, you hear all, I heard Tweety Bird last night, and I heard Pat Buchanan and somebody, impeachment, isn't that funny? Isn't that funny that they would bring that up? Why, they're crazy. Those left-wing loonies bringing up the I word, the impeachment. Oh, that crazy Dennis Kucinich wanting to impeach our esteemed Vice President, Mr. Cheney. Impeachment. The gravity of the situation that we're in screams for impeachment of this group. And we'll get into more of that as the day goes along, Mr. Tenet. That story. I have to tell you that I was completely ashamed of Dick Durbin's speech on the Senate floor last, when was it, Friday? Thursday? What am I saying, Friday? They don't work on Fridays. I think it was Thursday. But I was ashamed, and I like Dick Durbin. I've always liked Dick Durbin. I thought he's been a good senator, but I was completely ashamed. And if you know the reasons why, if you know a better explanation of what I'm about to talk about, why, be sure and let me know, 866-546-5254. Dick Durbin was on the Senate floor last Thursday, rebuking Bush and the war and all. And he got up there and said something that just baffled me. He said he knew, being a member of the Intelligence Committee, he knew a lot of this information was suspect and bogus and all that, but he couldn't say anything because it's classified information and he'd be breaking the law. He said, Mr. Durbin, let me pose the question to you. Is it more important for you to stay in the United States Senate and maintain your reputation? Or would it have been more important to step out in front of the American public and say, yes, I'm on the Intelligence Committee, and I can tell you there is intelligence information that's being used to formulate this war that is wrong, that is suspect, and we know it. He wouldn't have had to give the specific information. He could have alerted the public and let us know what was wrong. Or, even better, he could have broken the law, and he could have let us know what that classified information was and risk his political career in order to save us from going to war and losing over 3,300 lives right now. Dick Durbin, I'm ashamed of you for not doing that. When will politicians stand up and be real men and real women and suffer the consequences of something like that for their country and for the greater good of the people of the United States? But instead, oh no, I've got to protect my political ass. Didn't like to hear that. Well, I knew, you know, I knew that a lot of this information wasn't, you know, didn't look right to me, but I couldn't talk about it because it was classified. Let me give you a tip for all the rest of you for the future that are in the Congress of the United States and you know something like that. Do talk about it. Maybe you'll save 3,300 American lives. Maybe you'll save countless tens of thousands of Iraqi lives by telling the truth and alerting the public so that something can be done about it instead of, what was it, 75 or 80% of the American people going, yeah, let's go to war. Let's kill those bastards. Maybe we could have avoided that. I'm ashamed of you, Dick Durbin, for that. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, we lost that call. Bingo, just like that. Gone. And people in the chat room, right, Bob Graham from Florida, ex-senator from Florida, he hinted at incorrect intelligence before the war. He knew it. And who was it? Rockefeller, Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia, sent some sort of a private note to himself. I don't know, had it notarized or whatever so that he could prove this later. I don't know exactly what that was all about. But there were people on the other side, on our side of the aisle, that knew this. Instead of standing up and doing the right thing, they let it go. And I guess they were all gambling, thinking, well, this thing would turn out okay and it would be all right. And they probably drank the Kool-Aid. Well, don't worry, this will all be over with in just a little bit. As Mr. Cheney put it, weeks, I doubt months. So they all gambled. They all gambled that it would turn out okay. They gambled and lost. And it'd be okay if they were just gambling and losing their own reputations. But they lost the lives of 3,351 so far American military personnel, tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis, and hundreds of billions of dollars of debt for the United States that will haunt this country for decades to come. All in order just to save their political asses. That's cowardice, in my opinion. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
All right.
Well, I just don't understand, because this my buddy's the one that introduced me to this show, how you expect us to just get out of Iraq. I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years, and you're expecting me and my friends to just tuck our tails and run.
What's the alternative? You want to give me what you want to give me what the mission statement for the Bush administration is? You want to tell me what their goal is, what their end, you know, what's the end result going to be? Do they know? Do you know?
Well, I know that what we are doing down there is for the better good.
And what have we done? You tell me what we've done that's been for the better good. Tell me.
Oh, we've got Saddam out of power.
What else? Could have done that with a few guys on a clandestine mission, couldn't we?
We tried that before. Your Bill Clinton tried to do that, and he was unsuccessful.
Tried to do that with Saddam Hussein?
Yeah. You guys talked about the underground palace or whatnot. I was too young to remember that, but, you know, hey.
Tell me about all the good we've done in Iraq now. How's it going? Going really well?
It is. It's going well.
It is. And to what end?
Well, eventually, they will have a... you know, a nation that they can live in, free, without being murdered by a tyrant.
And you think that 1,400 years of sectarian violence is just going to fade away and they're all going to live happily ever after?
Yes, eventually it will.
You haven't studied history, have you?
Well, what about our Civil War? We're living in peace now, right?
That wasn't sectarian violence. That wasn't a sectarian problem. That wasn't a deep-rooted 1,400-year problem like they've got over there. Completely different.
No, that's not different. It's the same thing. They are
1,400 years where the hatred here in the United States, the country hadn't even been here 100 years yet when the Civil War started. You can't don't compare the Civil War to what goes on in Iraq. That's silly.
Well, I'm just telling you, by you being on this radio station bashing the American people.
Now, I didn't bash the American people. I bashed George Bush and all the people that put their little heads together and formulated this ridiculous war.
Well, it's gained us. Needed. It was needed. Could you imagine that if it didn't happen, where would we be today?
I think we'd be about $500 billion to the good. I think we'd have about 3,000 more citizens still alive in this country. I think our military wouldn't be wrecked. I think the rest of the world wouldn't look down on us like a bunch of warmongering assholes. Then that's the way they do look at us. The entire Middle East hates us.
Well, okay.
You don't understand the history of that area, do you?
The whole United States hates us. I mean, excuse me, the whole world hates us. So what's the difference?
And why does the whole world hate us right now?
Well, because we're a powerful nation. That's why. Period. Everybody's going to hate whoever's in power.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Do they all hate the British? They're pretty powerful. They've always had a good military. Does everybody hate them? French has got a good military. Does everybody hate them?
Oh, yeah. Let's bring up the French. We've helped the
French.
Oh,
here we go. You've been drinking the Kool-Aid, haven't you? You don't know anything about history, do you? You don't know anything about the French history? You don't know about their military history? You don't know anything but what you've heard from the right-wing Kool-Aid? Oh, how bad the French are.
Well, I know that I've grown up in a Republican house, and we...
And we are part of the 24% who still think George Bush is a good guy and doing a damn good job. Let me ask you something. George Bush has said that the Democrats had not ought to try and micromanage the war in Iraq. He has said that, has he not?
Yeah.
Why did George Bush try and micromanage the war and let one general after another go by the wayside when the generals told them flat out from the beginning of this whole war that they weren't doing it right, there weren't enough troops, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. They would not listen to the military, but now they want to listen to the military, don't they?
Oh, you're telling me that you believe that, you're just saying George Bush, anybody in power, all politicians are corrupt, all of them.
That's a pretty big statement. Do you know they're all corrupt?
You think Kerry would have gone in and done anything different? No, he wouldn't have. He would have done the same thing.
You have no idea what John Kerry would have done. That's ridiculous for you to even make that statement. You do not know what's in John Kerry's mind.
Well,
I'm telling you that George Bush has been telling us that we cannot micromanage the war. We need to let the generals on the ground run the war. Has he not been saying that? We need to let Petraeus run the war. Did he and Rumsfeld let the generals run the war when it started? Hell no. They got rid of most of them that objected to the way that he wanted to try and run it on the cheap and not put the proper number of military personnel and equipment in there, and they got rid of them. But now that it's going bad, not going good for them, now we better lay off and let the military run it. He made an ass of himself. Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, Fife, Bush, all of them made asses of themselves and micromanaged this war, and look how it's turned out.
And the same thing would have happened to anybody.
You have no idea what would have had. It's a stupid thing to say. You have no idea what would have happened with what we do know. Let's stick with what we do know. What we do know is
that you say that he had a very, very low rating before the election happened in 2004, and he got voted in on an overwhelming amount of people.
I didn't say he had a low rating before 2004. He had a good enough rating to get reelected. I didn't put words in my mouth.
I wish I had some tapes of
They're available at White Rose Society, every single one of them.
Yeah, I wish I could hear, because I bet you would.
You're welcome to. You can go to the archives. Anything you ever catch me in a lie in this show, I'll kiss your you-know-what at high noon. I never said George Bush had great ratings.
This is my third time listening to the show, and I tell you something right now, I want to puke every
time. Well, go over in the corner and puke. Just do that. You don't know shit from Shinola, my boy. You're too young to know the history of the Middle East. You don't know what's going on over there. You're willing to listen to the Kool-Aid. You told me you were brought up in a Republican household, and you've got your mind closed to the truth. You've obviously listened to Limbaugh and Hannity and everybody else that
Hannity
thinks they know it all.
Hannity is a genius.
Goodbye. You lose with that one. Oh, my God. Hannity's a genius. Let's go with the other line. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
I'm calling from Washington State.
Yes.
I have a little hissing on the phone line. Do you hear that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I apologize. I hope that's not mine. But I'm calling because I was really happy that Jack... my name's Diana, and I've listened to you for quite a while. I've called once before, months ago, and I really like you.
Well, thank you.
I just want to say I was really happy to see that Jack Mirtha had the courage to bring up the I word yesterday, even though it was a sort of a list, but I think he held his own on... sort of the interrogation that I don't remember who it was, that CBS reporter who asked him about it. What do you think of that?
I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cut this off. You're getting drowned out completely. I'm sorry. Hate to do that. Hey, we are going to have to pause for a break right now. I've got to get my guest on the phone coming up here in just a moment. And hang in there. We'll be back in just a moment or two.
Now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. It's one of my favorite times of the year this week, May Day, the holiday in which we celebrate emergencies communicated over the radio when we are in great danger and helpless. It's a time when we collectively cry out, May Day, May Day, in the hopes that someone somewhere is going to rescue us. It's a special day when we could be in an airplane headed straight for a mountain, or stranded behind enemy lines in Iraq with insurgents bearing down, or we could even be in the throes of a lost congressional vote. And all that sustains us in these dim times is a hope against all odds that someone is receiving our signal, our faint and dying signal, through all that static and the interference, and they're going to send a rescue party at the last possible second before we all die. Now here's hoping that your pitiful cry for help is heard on this joyous May Day holiday. God bless you.
my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody, and everybody listening on the Head On Radio Network today. So glad to have all of you join us for the program. As promised, you know, we talk about bad news on this program a lot of times, and in fact, most of the times it seems anymore during this Bush administration. But we've got a great story to report to you today, and I know you all remembered. I got so many responses from when we had Joshua Kors from about his article in the Nation. Nation magazine here, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and Joshua let me know yesterday there's an update on the story, and so we invited him on today to fill you in on this, and I'm feeling good about this. Joshua, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be with you, Guy.
I was so elated to get this correspondence from you yesterday, and I know you've got an update on it. Go ahead and lay down the foundation. I'll let you do it. What happened and where we're at now?
Sure. Well, my article delved into the story of Specialist John Towne, who was struck by a rocket in Iraq and lost most of his hearing because of the rocket's explosion. He was given the Purple Heart to honor his wounds, but when it came time to discharge him, the Army decided that his deafness was actually caused by a personality disorder. And discharging him with this pre-existing personality disorder, they never had to pay him disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life. I did some research into this, got me digging, found out that 22,500 soldiers in the last 6 years have been discharged with this personality disorder. Cheating those veterans out of their benefits is saving the military $12.5 billion in disability and medical care. You mentioned good news. Well, the article raised quite an uproar. And
evidently, and I'd like to know, do you have any indications of who, what, when, why, how they got a hold of this or whatever?
Well, I don't know the details just yet. I'm still working on that. But I can tell you this. The VA in Dayton, Ohio, where Specialist Town is from, had denied him benefits for over half a year. In fact, more than denied him, they said on 5 different occasions they had simply lost his paperwork and he'd have to reapply. I think that's a runaround that I'm sure many of the veterans in the audience will be familiar with. I spoke with Representative Bob Filner of San Diego, who is chairman of the House's Veterans Affairs Committee, and days later, the VA called Specialist Town for an emergency appointment, rushed him down to the VA, and is now giving him full medical care.
Oh, my God. What was the representative's name again?
Bob Filner, F-I-L-N-E-R.
Okay.
So that's one part of the puzzle. I also got a strong reaction from the Senate. And following the article, several key senators, including Barack Obama, Barbara Boxer, Joseph Lieberman, and the Republican Kit Bond have called for an investigation of this personality disorder scandal.
And these investigations are it's not far off, is it?
Well, no. You know, one step at a time here. I'm not sure exactly how things are going to progress. But with the Senate taking action and the House striking a note of interest, the onus for action really falls now on the Surgeon General. You could say the eye of the hurricane is over her office. Acting Surgeon General Gail Pollack, at first she said that she was ignorant of the 22,500 soldiers affected by this personality disorder scheme. Then when presented a stack of cases, including specialist towns, she said she was going to do a review. 5 months later, they came back and said they had done a thoughtful and thorough review. And they determined that all of the diagnoses were correct. That includes specialist town, whose deafness was seen as a personality disorder. That includes Richard Dykstra, whose bilateral hernia was seen as the result of a personality disorder. Guys, since we last spoke, I've been investigating the case of a soldier who damaged the lens of his eyeball in Iraq. That damage was seen as the result of a personality disorder.
I had that little known damaged damaged eye. Not a lot of people know about that condition, evidently, as being part of a personality disorder.
Yes, certainly. Apparently it's very rare.
So rare I never heard of it before. 22,500 of them.
Right.
What do you think? Where's
this
going?
That's just in the last 6 years alone. And this thoughtful and thorough review, I did a touch more digging on it, and perhaps it won't surprise you to find out the review was actually a sham. In their five-month review, they didn't interview a single soldier. What they did do is go back to the doctor's offices where the original false diagnoses were made and ask them whether they got it right the first time. The offices there said, yep, we did. And they considered that a thoughtful and thorough review. I got a note from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tolman. His memo went even further than Surgeon General Gail Pollock's. He said they had gone back and reviewed all the cases at Fort Carson, where Specialist Town was based, from the last 4 years and found all of those diagnoses to be correct. I called Colonel Tallman and asked him how they could consider this a thoughtful and thorough diagnosis when they didn't interview a single soldier. And he said to me, well, I'm not really sure that we can. And he said, let me be clear with you. I didn't write this memo, and I have no knowledge of its contents.
Wait a minute. Let me stop you for a minute. This memo, where did it come from? It came from his office.
It's signed by Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman, spokesman for the U.S. Army. He told me that they like to stamp his name and his office on memos that address issues of Army relevance.
Oh, my God.
But he had no involvement in it. He pointed me to the person who did, Gail Pollock's press secretary, Cynthia Vaughn. And after 21 phone calls, I finally broke through to Ms. Vaughn and was able to get an explanation of this review from her, an explanation I think will chill many of your listeners. She said that the reason they didn't interview any soldiers was because these dismissals and diagnoses happened a few months ago, and Ms. Pollock didn't feel that there would be any medically valid information that the soldiers would have to share today. Now, certainly, if Specialist Town had been deaf before joining the Army, he might have remembered that.
You would think.
You would think.
You might.
If his commanders had thought him too ill to serve, they might have had some thoughts about watching him earn 12 medals for his performance. But Ms. Pollock didn't feel that way, and so they completed the review without interviewing a single soldier.
And supposedly this review is through the doctors that made the diagnosis in the first place.
That's right. They admitted up front that they didn't do the review, that it was farmed out to Fort Carson, which is the seems to be the epicenter of these false diagnoses.
And whoever made any false diagnoses, of course, they're going to step forward and say, "Yeah, I really screwed up," or "I wanted that." This is so outrageous. Oh.
Yes, well, you know, Colonel Stephen Knorr has been known for rubber stamping his doctor's false diagnoses. He's the head of the Evans Army Hospital's psychological division. They did try to assure me that the doctors who did the diagnoses were not the doctors who did this review. But when I pressed on that point, the panel of expert health reviewers got shrunk to just one person. It became the one person who did the review. They refused to release the identity of that one person. But everybody involved in this believes that it is Colonel Knorr. Guy, you might remember Colonel Knorr from my article. Mm-hmm. He was the one who said that in making the original diagnoses, his doctors didn't need to talk to the soldiers or their families to determine that this was a pre-existing condition before the soldiers joined the Army, because those soldiers and those families didn't have the keen psychological insight that he and his doctors did, so talking to them would be of little value. I have found out in recent days that Colonel Knorr, in his capacity as a psychiatrist, was also actively involved in producing personality disorder diagnoses. So I've gone back to the Surgeon General and given her an opportunity to retract that part of her statement.
Are you holding out any hope that she'll answer you?
You know, who's to say? I think as pressure builds from the House and from the Senate, there'll come a point where all of these officials can no longer get by with no comment. That point has not yet come. And I think about the Walter Reed scandal. You'll recall that with the Walter Reed Hospital scandal, when the disheveled conditions there were discovered, the Pentagon reacted in two ways. First, it accepted the retirement of Surgeon General Kevin Kiley, and it hired public relations firm LMW Strategies with a $100,000 no-bid contract to put a positive spin on the Walter Reed scandal. It'll be very curious to see how they handle Gail Pollack, the current Surgeon General, in the wake of this $12.5 billion scandal.
Now, the Senate's gotten involved. You mentioned Obama and Boxer and Lieberman and maybe another one that I forgot. How far are they going to go with this?
I can't say. I think there's certainly a lot to dig into. I know that all the veterans groups that I've been speaking with, all they want is to allow these wounded soldiers to sit in front of the Senate and tell their story on camera, directly to the American people.
Oh, they should. I hope and pray they get the chance to do that, because this is frankly is an outrage like none other I think I've heard during the we've got the Tillman affair and all that, but with 22,500 soldiers involved is just beyond the pale. It really is. Well, I'm sure glad you're following up on this, and I know you're going to continue after it. I hope you get some more answers.
I hope I do, too. I think there's certainly a lot of answers to be found. I've been working on this for 7 months now, and there's certainly a lot of uncovered territory. To go back to the Senate review, they're investigating, they're seeking an investigation on the personality disorder aspect of this, but there's also the malingering aspect, which is Army speak for faking it. Dr. Richard Purdy, the audiologist at Fort Carson, accused Specialist Town of faking his hearing loss, and he's one of thousands to have that happen. So soldiers are really faced with a Hobson's choice. Either they ignore their own injuries and try to just suck it up as best they can, or they go in and face the hospitals, try to get treatment, try to avoid the 513 personality disorder discharge, and even then they're accused of faking their illnesses to avoid service.
After volunteering for service and serving, and being in I almost said Vietnam again, and I do that all the time, and I swear to God I don't mean it, but being in Iraq and having this happen, and to come home and have this whole set of circumstances happen to a specialist town and 22,500 others is just... it's one of the biggest outrages I've heard in this entire horrible saga of the Bush War in Iraq. But somewhere, one of the senators, or two, or maybe all of them, has got a copy of your nation's article sitting in front of them, I think.
They do. They do. It's a troubling situation. No one can say what's going to happen from here. I think a lot of it's just going to depend on how much public pressure is brought to bear. If any of your listeners aren't familiar with the article, you're certainly urged to go read it. All you have to do is go to thenation.com or go to Google and type in how Specialist Town lost his benefits. There has been a strong public reaction. Type in Specialist John Town on the internet right now, and you get over 2 million Google hits.
Oh, okay.
People know about him, and I know that community groups have been reaching out to him on a local level, from the veterans of foreign wars in his community to, I heard just the other day that Dave Matthews, the rock and roll star, mentioned him at a local concert, and now the Dave Matthews fan club, ants, as they like to be called, they are now putting up a collection for him.
Oh, man.
We'll see where that goes.
This story kind of hits home with me because I don't know if I mentioned to you before or not, but Specialist John Town's hometown is extremely close to where I'm from, and I have, and also the Dayton VA hospital. I had a friend that I took down there for care at least a dozen times, so I follow this closely, and I'm thrilled about it that something's getting done for once. Somebody getting involved like yourself and writing a story and exposing this has really done some good. And you, Joshua, you got to feel really good about this.
I do. I think it's a long leap from helping him to those other 22,000. And mind you, those 22,000 are just the ones who were discharged with this personality disorder. There are thousands and thousands of others who were able to slide their way into a different discharge after receiving that fake personality disorder diagnosis, whether it was someone who fought successfully for the opportunity to go before a med board and get his disabilities recognized, or in many tragic cases, soldiers who just couldn't wait that long and ended up being booted out for, say, marijuana possession.
Yeah. Well,
or,
you know the old saying, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, and certainly we've taken a step. Somebody here might want to ask a question. Are you up to taking a question here?
Absolutely.
Hang on a second here. We'll see what... Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for Joshua?
Yes, I do. Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach. How are you?
Good.
Joshua, I want to thank you for doing this article and doing the research. His local VA, not VFW, rather, they're going to bat for him, but there is still an entire country full of VFW posts with guys that will follow this commander-in-chief, you know, over a cliff, you know. And I think we as individuals support the troops. We have to support the troops in actual action. You know, and I'm glad you mentioned the link to the story here. Those of us listening could actually print it out, look in our local telephone book and find the VFW post, stick it in an envelope and say, are you guys for the troops or are you still backing the criminal, you know, the guy that's hurting them? You know, we can do stuff like that. I wonder how much physical time it would take. A 39-cent stamp, the time to print it out off your printer and drop it in an envelope. I think it could be done in a half hour's time.
I think it's actually even easier than that with the Internet.
Uh-huh.
Simply an email would do.
I'm talking about these yahoos in your local VFW post in any town, America, who are still running around in the way between truth and justice, defending these criminals in the White House. You know, what can we do in the other 50 states that I'm suggesting an action? These guys don't look on the Internet. They're in there with their pickup trucks and their beer and calling anyone of us who actually standing up for these troops communists. You know, it's still happening, at least up here in this part of Florida.
Well, exposure is the big thing, Phil, and this is going to get a lot of exposure from Joshua's article. Hey, Phil, thanks for your call. Joshua, I want to thank you for coming back on and getting this all out again. This is a great start to getting something done about this, and I'm thrilled about it. And I know there's a long way to go, but you got the ball rolling, and I'm extremely proud of you for that.
No, I appreciate that, guys. The best in journalism to try to make a stamp somewhere.
Absolutely, and I'd say you've done it, my friend. Joshua, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now. Ah, it's good to hear some good news. I have been following this, and honestly, I haven't had any correspondence with Josh since he's been on the show. But to hear that Specialist Town is now getting his benefits and all, doggone it, that's a big victory, and I'm very, very happy about that, and I know many of you are happy to hear it as well. What are we going to do? I guess we're going to pause for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Yeah.
Ah, one of my favorite tunes has been since the day I first heard it so many years ago. You know, we have favorite music because of a lot of reasons. A lot of times it's just a beautiful tune, and that one certainly qualifies as that. The music I happen to think is beautiful. And a lot of times people have favorite songs because of the beat, and they like to dance. And this particular song I love because not only is the music beautiful, but the lyrics, and it's so meaningful, and I think will remain meaningful for the rest of time. It's in my top three or four favorite songs ever, and I know she'll always remain so because of the very, very deep meaning of it. I love that song. I'm one of those ones that happens to think that someday when students at Heidelberg University or the great universities, the great music schools are studying music, they'll not only be studying Brahms, Beethoven, Bach, Berlioz, and all the great composers. I think they'll be studying McCartney and Lennon as well. I do believe that. And their music has left a lasting impact on us, and I think it's here for all time. Oh, I guess this isn't a music show, but now and then we throw in a nice tune from our music director, Billy Shears. And I think with all that's going on, the song Imagine is very appropriate and apropos for the discussion in the program today. We got another hour coming up after the news, and we hope you'll decide to join us at 866-546-5254. And you can email us at guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com. I see already we've gotten a flood of email in concerning our interview that we just had with Joshua. That lifted my spirits for today, I can tell you that. Where are we at here? Got news coming up in about a minute and 15 seconds. Did want to mention about the Bush ladies. We'll talk about that after the top of the hour. Seems like we end up with such great first ladies from the Bush family, and we'll mention that. And I see Rush Limbaugh's been out on the town. He and his girlfriend said they went out to the Kobe Club and had Japanese strip steak, Kobe beef, beef cheek ravioli, a large seafood platter, a combo of American, Australian, and Japanese steaks, and several side dishes. After finishing their $700 feast, Limbaugh left the server, get this, a $1,000 tip. On a previous night, Limbaugh and another female friend were spotted by patrons sharing a $4,000 bottle of wine at the 21. Wonder what kind of a tip he has to give his girlfriend at the end of the evening. I'm just wondering, just asking. Listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad, reports have come in saying Al-Qaeda leader Abu al-Masri has been killed. His death has not been confirmed by U.S. military officials, but the Iraqi ministry says the intelligence confirming his death is very strong, adding al-Masri was either killed by an Al-Qaeda rival or Sunni tribesmen who turned against the terrorist group. Pro-immigration marches and rallies are scheduled today across the country. In addition, meetings and voter registration drives are planned in cities from the East Coast to the West Coast. Hispanic leaders say the demonstrations are an attempt to keep attention on immigration reform and prevent it from being pushed to the political back burner. The nationalization of Venezuelan oil fields is complete. President Hugo Chavez's government took control over the country's last remaining private oil fields at midnight. Chavez has left an offer on the table for corporate oil companies to maintain a minority stake in the oil business in the region, which stands to surpass Saudi Arabia as the world's largest deposit of oil reserves. In more sectarian violence around Baghdad, 14 Iraqis traveling south from the capital city today were killed by gunmen, and mortars slammed into the green zone, landing near the prime minister's office. No injuries were reported. Congress is expected to deliver a $124 billion war funding bill to the White House today. The bill contains a timetable for troop withdrawal from Iraq. President Bush has promised a veto. In Afghanistan, a third day of anti-American demonstrations continued. Protests are over the Sunday killing of six Afghanis by U.S. troops. The U.S. says four of them were Taliban fighters. Locals say they were not insurgents, but innocent civilians. California Senator Dianne Feinstein has introduced legislation to close down the Guantanamo Bay prison and move the trials of detainees to the U.S. Feinstein says the military prison injures U.S. credibility worldwide. In Turkey, while attempting to shut down an anti-government May Day rally today, police arrested at least 600 protesters. Demonstrators are protesting against recent government action, which they say threatens to turn the country from a secular nation to an Islamic state. In Jerusalem, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says he will not resign despite the release of a scathing report criticizing his government's handling of last year's war in Lebanon. The report says the government was inexperienced and rash, which led to crucial mistakes. In the wake of last month's Virginia Tech shooting, new legislation has been passed now requiring the names of mental health patients to be included on a list of individuals barred from purchasing firearms. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
We want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea, on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple keystrokes and you're visiting a beautiful website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, quiet, and the best shops, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that honest information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Sumatran rhino has given birth to a record-setting third calf. Emi, which is only one of four rhinos in the U.S., gave birth to an 86-pound male. According to zoo officials, this is the first time more than one rhino has been born in captivity. News Corp has made a friendly offer to buy the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones & Company. In an unsolicited bid, the Rupert Murdoch Company offered to buy the struggling publishing business controlled by the Bancroft family for $60 a share or $5 billion. Google's responded to a March 13th lawsuit filed against it by Viacom. In the litigation, Viacom accuses Google's popular website YouTube of willfully violating copyright laws. Google says YouTube fully cooperates with all copyright laws and complies with requests to have unauthorized material removed. Venezuela President Hugo Chavez says his country is pulling out of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Analysts say the move is mostly political. Venezuela has already paid off its debts to those institutions. Circuit City is warning it expects a quarterly loss of up to $90 million despite its recent cost-cutting moves. The nation's second-largest electronics retailer says its sales have been disappointing, especially those of flat-panel TVs. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.15 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange and on Wall Street. The Dow Jones is up 30, the NASDAQ is down 4, and the S&P 500 is flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
God bless America.
Let me
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, welcome back to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. I'm in a good mood today. And let me tell you right now, if you got any friends that are right-wingers like that caller we had in the first hour of the program, do encourage them to call in. We eat them for lunch, you know. Just send them in. Fun to have that now and then. Really is, I must say. Yes, I am in a good mood today after hearing that report from Joshua about Specialist Town getting his benefits and all. Nice to know that now and then the good guys win, you know. It really is. We've had a watershed, a waterfall, I don't know what to call it. News one day after another, and as you all know, we're operating on that, scandal overload, outrage overload, whatever you want to call it. It just seems like it never stops flowing. In past administrations, there'd be some little deal come out, and then you'd have a few months of quiet. And it never stops with these guys. It just never stops. And, you know, I'll be the first to criticize when something's amiss, but I'll also be the first to give credit when credit's due. And I have to say that I give all the credit in the world to the Junior Bush administration for having the biggest cojones that I've ever heard of. And they do. These people are the masters. The all-time champs. They're the kind of people... Trying to think of a good analogy. I think they'd rob a bank in broad daylight, get caught outside the bank with their mask still on, a gun in one hand and a suitcase of money in the other hand, and bank video showing them in the act along with 200 eyewitnesses, and they'd stand there and say, "Who, me? No, I didn't do anything." And then they'd walk away claiming executive privilege or something. That's the kind of guys and gals we're dealing with here. Over, I mean, it's a, you know, I've never seen anything like it. My head is spinning like in that movie, you know, can't think of it. I'm so bad at thinking, remember names of movies, but you know, you take the Gonzalez, the Department of Justice case, for example, aside from Gonzo throwing himself on the mercy of the Congress and personally admitting everything, could there possibly be any more damning evidence against him showing his unethical and incompetent behavior as Attorney General? Could there? Knowing all we've seen so far, it's just literally stunning that this guy has the temerity to stay, to think that he deserves to be the top law officer in the United States of America. It's akin to having Al Capone be the police chief in Chicago back in the roaring 20s. It really is. Maybe kind of like having Osama bin Laden being appointed chief of Homeland Security. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible that this can be tolerated by the White House, and yet Gonzalez is carrying on as if nothing ever happened. And Junior Bush comes out and says he's got, renewed faith in Gonzo. He was actually satisfied with Gonzo's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Junior Bush himself... Big cojones. Every single day, it seems we're seeing disastrous carnage and death of a bigger magnitude in Iraq. And yet, this guy can stand before the American people and tell about the progress we're making with his vaunted surge. We hear of 100 people dying in a car bomb situation in Baghdad, and Junior Bush tells us about a great victory of capturing a pickup truck from out of Iran with a dozen rifles in it. I mean, we read accounts from Baghdad every single day about how their so-called government is falling apart, and it is. if it was ever together in the first place. And yet Bush will stand there and tell us of the great march toward democracy by the Maliki government, which is a sham. Hell, half of the parliament isn't even living in Iraq because it isn't safe for them to live there. And we're talking about establishing democracy in that country? The people aren't happy with the Maliki government. Of course, the people here aren't happy with the Bush administration either. And then we've got General Petraeus telling us a couple of months ago that this surge is going to need a couple of months. Now, just give us time now. We should start seeing results in a couple of months. Just give us time. Let's be fair. You know, they just confirmed Petraeus unanimously and sent him over there, and but now he tells us things aren't in place as of yet, and it's going to take a few more months to get the kind of progress that he thinks we can make. And this is the guy that Bush keeps extolling as the savior of Iraq. The question is, will they let the guy do what he needs to in Iraq? I don't know. I think it's too late. But what an absurd argument for the Bush administration to make all along. And as I mentioned to that stupid caller we had, oh my God. You know, we're hearing this all the time, and we're hearing the talking points come straight out of the RNC, straight out of the White House every day. Oh, they're tying the hands. We can't tie the hands of the general on the ground. And, you know, they're using that word micromanage. Oh, we can't let the Congress micromanage this war. We can't have 535 people running the war. We need to let the generals on the ground run it. Is that what they thought when this war started? Certainly not. How many generals had to get out because they didn't agree with Bush? Did they let him run it? The generals on the ground run it? Hell no, they didn't. Donald Rumsfeld was running it. Richard Pearl was running it. Feith was running it. They were all telling the military minds how to run a war. And look what happened. But now, we can't tie the hands of the military. We can't micromanage the war. And then there's this new book by George Tenet. I don't know what you think about it. There's a lot of people got various opinions about it, but it appeared to me that this is a book that's a mixture of lies and distortions with a little truth added in it for good measure, so as to make it a little bit plausible, at least. It's a book written by a lying scoundrel about a whole group of lying scoundrels. And now, after giving Tenet the Medal of Freedom, they're wanting to discredit him. I've said all along that Medal of Freedom ceremony with Bremer and Tommy Frank and Tenet was the most blatant attempt to buy silence I've ever seen. And don't you know, Tenet is breaking the silence to make a buck. Now, I'm not saying he isn't telling the truth about some of this. I'm sure he is, but he's also trying to save his ass from public opinion. Because he's right in that barrel with Douglas Feith and Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz and Cheney. He's in there with them. How'd you like to have your reputation wrapped around, intertwined with those guys for the rest of your life? If you got awfully thick skin, I suppose you could do that, but I want to assure you, I couldn't do it. I couldn't live with it. But it seems that the scent of millions of dollars was just too much for Tenet to resist. So he decided to squeal on a bunch of rats who put this whole Bush war plan together in the first place. And they are doing some squealing. Oh, they're squealing. Condoleezza isn't liking it much either. I can't wait to hear any comments Dickie Dark Cheney might have to make about the whole thing. He'll say something. He can't keep his mouth shut about it. But again, the cojones of these people. Amazing. We're hearing firsthand information from a guy deeply involved in selling the whole Bush war package to the American public by using a bunch of lies and distortions and information they knew was highly suspect, and they stand there now and say, "What? You talking to me? We don't know nothing." I mean, that's how they all acted. Well, the intelligence was bad. Please don't blame us for that. We didn't know. Never mind, we're over there framing the intelligence the way we want it, cherry picking it day after day after day, trying to make us believe that the Italian forgery about the Niger yellow cake story that a six-year-old kid would have figured out was a forgery. The British government has information. You know, blame it all on somebody else. Has the buck ever stopped on George Bush's desk? And I'm so sick of hearing people say, well, Guy, you always blame Bush for everything. Damn it, he's the president. Somebody show him that sign that was on Harry Truman's desk that said the buck stops here, because he sure as hell doesn't know about it. He hasn't taken responsibility for anything. Anything. A real man would. And, you know, you go on with this. The Scooter Libby affair. The escapades of Jack Abramoff. Both of these stories led straight to the White House front door, and yet we hear, no, we don't know any Jack Abramoff. No. And Scooter, poor Scooter. Poor Scooter's as pure as the driven snow. He got railroaded. Poor Scooter. And that Abramoff, no, I know you've seen those pictures of Bush shaking hands with his arm around him and all that, but honest to God, they're photoshopped, because I don't think they ever really actually met him. They don't know him. Nobody in Washington knew Jack Abramoff, right? The cojones of these guys. You know, I sit here and try and think of the $14 billion in cash missing from U.S. custody in Iraq. Hey, it's just an accounting thing. Everybody misplaces a few bucks now and then. Who knows? It might turn up yet. Kind of like finding a $20 bill in your old suit coat you haven't worn for a while. Same thing here. $14 billion. Ah, you know. That's the price of doing business. Wonder how much money Paul Bremer's got in a foreign bank account. I'd love to know. And you got Karl Rove. Here, we know now. I mean, we've known this all along. But now they have proof about it, and they're bringing it out, and they're going to investigate it. And why, you know, it's not going to do any good. But, you know, he's running a political indoctrination operation during government hours in government buildings to government employees in open, blatant defiance of the Hatch Act. You could not come up with more of a transgression against the Hatch Act than this. And has Orrin Hatch said anything about it? Nothing. Not a word. Not a peep. Move along, folks. Nothing to see here. Now, I know, and I like to be fair in this program, and I know there have been other administrations that have had open contempt for the American people and anybody who might get in their way. Nixon comes to mind. But my God, these people in office right now are the New York Yankees compared to the Nixon people being second-rate little leaguers when it comes to open corruption in government. And when found out, just telling everybody to take a flying leap. They've amassed all the power they possibly can for the executive office, and they're taking full advantage of it to put up a wall around the White House and insulate themselves from the law and from the people. And from the justice they deserve. These are the people who promised to bring dignity, and I'm quoting them, bring dignity back to the White House. Instead, they've made it a filthy cesspool of lies, of deceit, and of corruption. We, you and I, should be ashamed for allowing them to get away with this. All of America is responsible for this. I can't believe there's not a million people marching around the outside of the White House every single day. I can't believe it's come to this. I can't believe that the mall in Washington, D.C. is void of massive demonstrations every weekend or throughout the week, or MacArthur Park across the street. I just can't believe it. Where are the people? I know we have a lot of activists listen to this program, and I know a lot of you are involved, heavily involved, in a campaign against this Bush administration and demonstrate against things that are right and wrong so little right. The American people sits here silently, silently, week after week after week. And these people discovered early on that they can get away with any damn thing they want to. And they do. And they have, and they will continue to do so as long as we let them do it. That's why it just really upset me when I hear the people over the weekend, and I heard people on the talk shows last night, making fun of Jack Murtha for bringing up the impeachment word. Laughing about it, like he's some sort of a nut. And say, you know, I heard him say last night, well, you know, he's got to appease those people on the far left. Those far left loony commie pinkos on the left. They've got to appease those people, you know. That's their base. I cannot possibly understand, as hard as I try, and I do try and be fair, I try and be objective, I always try and get myself into a position where I can argue both sides of the story. But I can't, in my wildest imagination, my wildest dreams, imagine trying to defend this George W. Bush, his entire administration, his vice president, his secretary of state, the congressional leaders on the right. I cannot put myself in their place. I just can't do it. Going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a minute. La, 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 la.
Dear Mr. President, come take a walk with me.
Take a walk with me.
Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud? How do you sleep while the rest of us cry? How do you dream when a mother has no chance to say goodbye? How do you walk with your head held high? Can you even look me in the eye? Tell me why. Na, 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 na. Dear Mr. President, were you a lonely boy? Can you say no child is left behind? We're not dumb and we're not blind. They're all sitting in your cells while you pave the road to hell. What kind of father would take his own daughter's rights away? And what kind of father might hate his own daughter if she were gay?
Chance.
Mr. President, you'd never take a walk with me.
Ah, yes, dear Mr. President, dear Mr. President, welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us today. A lot of information to pass along to you yet today, and we'll get to it for sure. Just having an email exchange, and I'll get to the phone here just in a minute. And by the way, you can give us a call at 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254, toll-free, our nickel. Again, we had a little email exchange during the song there, and it fascinates me. It really does. You know, that we heard our young right-wing caller a little earlier. The thinking that goes on there is so bizarre, so abhorrent, so outside the norm. And, you know, outside the norm isn't always bad, but when you're on the wrong side of it every time. You know, somebody brought up Bin Laden to me. You know, after half a decade, I think the verdict's pretty doggone clear. Junior Bush has been the biggest ally Osama bin Laden has. He's helped bin Laden at pretty much every turn, even if only by his own stupidity, incompetence, and cowardice. And when the next big terrorist attack comes, and it will, we can thank none other than George W. Bush for help make it happen. I do feel that way about him. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy.
Hello.
This is Alice from California.
Hello, Alice. How are you?
I still am one of your special guys. I tell you, that first speaker, I couldn't believe. I really couldn't, that he could talk that way.
Yeah, I know. I know. It makes you wonder.
Yes, it sure does. Bush and this administration really don't care what we the people think.
Not in the least.
In a democracy, the officials would have to answer to the people. I'm sure they have taken democracy away from us. They've ruined our country, Guy.
And continue on with their plan every day. It just doesn't stop.
I know.
It's something new almost every day now.
It breaks my heart because I love this country.
Absolutely.
I always have.
Absolutely, and it's just a shame that's a shame we've ever seen these people come to power, and we'll regret these 8 years in the days to come. There's no question. Alice, nice to hear from you.
Well, and just all the luck in the world, Guy.
Thanks, Alice.
I will do my part, you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. Let's go over here to line two. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Patrick. How you doing, man?
Hi, Patrick.
Oh, hey. Well, I hope that Dems don't cave in to this guy. I mean, you know, what are we going to do, man? You know, he gets strong. We don't get stronger. We're in a lot of trouble, and they're going to let this guy veto the bill. I mean, you know, we need to get out of there. So I'll just do it.
That's right, and he's going to... I don't know. I think they just ran it up there... half hour ago or so, they took the bill up, and he'll probably make short work of it and veto it right away just to show his...
It didn't work in Vietnam, and it's not going to work here. You know, Afghanistan's a legitimate war, and we've done a bad job over there. But, I mean, this is senseless.
Because of Iraq.
Yeah. And we just had two people in Florida just... What were they? Just killed a day or two ago.
Yeah.
You know, local people. And then... You know me, Guy, my good old terrorist buddy, Louis Posada, hit Florida last week. You know that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, anyway, and he's down there with his other terrorist friends and the Bush family terrorist friends.
Yeah, well.
And guess what? Jeb lives down there now, too, don't he?
Yeah, well, Posada's a hero in Miami.
Yeah, him and Orlando Vosh, Felix Rodriguez,
yeah.
Jeb Bush, man, Mel Martinez, all the little terrorists down there. One big happy family, man.
Ah, you to be sure they are.
I hope we don't cave into this guy. We got to get our guys and gals out of there. You know what I mean?
That's
right. Because it bothers me. It bothers me. If you're going to go to war, let's go fight, win the war, and then leave. Let's not hang around. You know?
Now they're
we're a machine of fighting people, but we're a bad occupier. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the occupation hasn't has never worked. Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you. Bye now. You know. Bush is going to do it. I mean, he's going to veto it, and he's going to stand there and give that damn grin of his. And, yeah, see, I told you so. I told you I'd veto this bill. See, I mean, ain't going to do it. Ain't going to give in. They're not going to, you know. He's going to ignore the will of the American people, and he's going to veto a bill that would send, you know, set a little bit of a timeline for ending it, and it's not carved in stone. That's one thing a lot of people don't know about this bill. There are no dates certain on there. There are guidelines, and there are objectives that the Maliki government should meet in order for us to leave. And you know, but for the last several weeks, Bush and members of his administration have over and over and over again attacked the proponents of any kind of a timeline, saying that they were undermining the U.S. generals and legislating defeat and all. You know, you've heard all the things. And I looked up some quotes from him. He said, "I believe artificial timetables of withdrawal would be a mistake. I will strongly reject an artificial timetable withdrawal and or Washington politicians trying to tell those who wear the uniform how to do their job." President Bush, April 23rd, 2007. We've already mentioned about how he would not let the military do the job when the whole thing got going. About how many military generals got the hell out of the military because they couldn't agree with what Bush wanted to do. And then Bush goes on to say, "The attempt to micromanage," and there's that word, "to micromanage our commanders is an unwise and perilous endeavor, and it is impossible to argue that an unconditional timetable for retreat could serve the security interests of the United States or our friends in the region." Vice President Cheney, April 13, 2007. Said he's also in denial that a surrender date he thinks is a good idea. It is not a good idea. It is defeat. It's a death sentence for the millions of Iraqis who voted for a constitution, who voted for a government, who voted for a free and democratic society. That's Dana Perino. The miserable failure in the White House press secretary assistant that Tony Snow lauded last evening, says she did such a fabulous job. I've never seen anybody more inept at the podium in the White House than her. But after hearing all that about Junior Bush talking about timetables and benchmarks and all that, how he just can't abide any of that, let's take a look back to 1999, when Junior Bush was governor of Texas. And as you know, we were in Kosovo. And Bush criticized Clinton for not setting a timetable for exiting Kosovo. Let me remind Junior Bush of this. April 9th, 1999, in the Houston Chronicle, Junior Bush said, "Victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain to us what the exit strategy is," end quote. And on the specific need for a timetable, Junior Bush, June 5th, 1999, Seattle Post Intelligencer, and I quote, "I think it's also important for the president to lay out a timetable as to how long they will be involved and when they will be withdrawn," end quote. So despite his past statements, we have Junior Bush now refusing to apply the same standard to his war. And then he smears those who want a similar timetable for Iraq as he wanted for Kosovo. Do these people actually believe that we don't remember anything he says, or that we don't have the opportunity to check out what he said years ago? Do they think we just don't have that ability? You know, the fourth anniversary of Junior Bush's little dance across the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln. 3,351 American deaths, not counting any there might have been today. Going to be over $500 billion. They originally estimated to be $50 billion. And now they want another $116 billion. And it all comes to $564 billion so far. And some of the things $564 billion could buy. They could buy a college education, tuition, fees, room and board at a public university for about half of the nation's 17 million high school teenagers. Imagine that. And most of those kids, or many, will go without a college education. It could buy preschool for every 3- and 4-year-old in the country for the next 8 years. What's more valuable? It could buy a year's stay in an assisted living facility for about half of the 35 million Americans aged 65 or older. You know, the number of morons who actually voted for Junior Bush in 2004 were 62 million. Only 50 million voted for him in the year 2000. So 12 million joined his ranks from 2000 and 2004 after seeing the miserable record he had during those 4 years. I will never understand that as long as I live. Never. And again, we'll bring it up what we've always said on this show. The number of senators who voted for the Iraq War resolution and who are running for the, for president, who will get my vote if they don't apologize publicly for being duped by this administration, the answer to that is zero. Zero. And again, some of these people seem to think that we don't have any memories, that we don't have any way of remembering what they said in years gone by. The idiot, and we've talked about him so much on this show, he's a cartoon caricature, he really is, this idiot Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, out of everybody that's on Capitol Hill, and I'm probably including the grill cooks, the janitors, everybody in Capitol, he has to be the stupidest person on Capitol Hill. That includes everybody in the building. He has to be. I look at this guy, I listen to this guy, and I wonder what the hell is wrong with Oklahoma. But he's speaking the other day to the press before Cheney's arrival, and he lambasted the Democrats for the Senate vote to begin withdrawal from Iraq by October 1st. And the press, he was nailing the press for mischaracterizing, he said, the reasons for U.S. involvement. And I quote him, "The whole idea of weapons of mass destruction was never the issue, yet they keep trying to bring this up," Inhofe said. He actually said that. "The whole idea of weapons of mass destruction was never the issue. Yet they keep trying to bring this up." He's talking about the press. And so they press him for an explanation on it. And Inhofe said weapons of mass destruction were incidental to the decision to invade Iraq. He said the media made that the issue because they knew Saddam Hussein had used weapons of mass destruction. The media made that the issue. Mr. Inhofe, let me remind you that in August of 2002, you said, and I quote directly, "Our intelligence system has said that we know that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, I believe including nuclear. There's not one person on this panel who would tell you unequivocally that he doesn't have the missile means now or is nearly getting the missile means to deliver a weapon of mass destruction, and I, for one, am not willing to wait for that to happen." That's the same idiot Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma who said that the whole idea of weapons of mass destruction was never the issue. The press brought it up. Whew, boy. The guy is such a moron. And they're always talking about the surge and the war on terror. We found some stats that have just come out about the overall consequences of the Iraq War. Junior's war on terror strategery is not working so well. Terrorist attacks worldwide shot up 25% last year. These numbers were compiled by the National Counterterrorism Center. Terrorist attacks in the world shot up 25% last year, particularly in Iraq, where extremists use chemical weapons and suicide bombers to target crowds. That's according to a new State Department report. And its annual global survey of terrorism to be released Monday, the State Department says about 14,000 attacks took place in 2006, mainly in Iraq and Afghanistan. These strikes claimed more than 20,000 lives, two-thirds in Iraq, and that's 3,000 more attacks than in 2005 and 5,800 more deaths. Altogether, 40% more people were killed by increasingly lethal means around the globe. The report partly attributes the higher casualty figures to a 25% jump in the number of non-vehicular suicide bombings. It's one stinking bad piece of news after another on this so-called war on terror. And we're losing. We're trying to fight an ant with a hammer. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, whenever you hear this, it's Angelica, remember. Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to remind you before you sign off for today that today's Labor Day.
Labor Day?
Yes. All over the world, except for the United States. And I just, not too long ago, found out that this is where it derives that day. So, from your labor movement. First of May.
Oh, 1st of May, okay, around the world, okay. Well, you know how the story goes. If it's not Labor Day in the United States, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so why isn't it?
That's the way this country has always looked at everything. Anything that goes on outside this country just doesn't matter. And I'm afraid we've been the ugly American for far too long.
Yeah, but, you know, I was really surprised to learn that this movement actually did originate in the United States, in Chicago. And it was a labor fight, and it was the beginning, you know, people working, fighting for the eight-hour day and dying for it back in 1886.
Samuel Gompers and all the people that fought.
Yeah, it's just such an important day, and it's just totally being disregarded, and Labor Day has been being misused. In September for some ridiculous reason. I don't know. What do you celebrate then, basically? What do you do?
Well, we celebrate Labor Day, but it's just another one of those things.
In what way?
Well, I always celebrate labor. I go to the labor parades. We have parades and so forth, the unions and all, and celebrate the fight for that. But it's a fight that's now lost. I mean, it's virtually over with. The unions are nearly dead.
Yeah, but it didn't happen in September.
Christmas didn't happen on December 25th either, nor did Easter happen when, you know. It's not the dates that's important, I don't think. But
the first May Day celebration was in May 1st, 1890. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think it is important.
That's good.
It just seems that, you know, being that the American government then, you know, thought, well, it's a communist movement, so let's do away with it, because they obviously are against labor movements and in unions. So anything that reminds of that day would probably be not welcome. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
Well, I don't know that that's it. I just think it... we're really bad here. I mean, look, we don't celebrate Lincoln's birthday on Lincoln's birthday anymore. We don't celebrate Washington's birthday on his birthday. We don't sell anything.
Anything. You move it to the next Monday. That's a little bit different than moving something from May to September.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why the difference in the date, but at least it does get celebrated.
It was the first uprising of workers. You know, it's a very significant day.
I'm afraid it's a movement that's almost completely dead in this country.
I was very proud to learn about that, you know, that it started in America. So I just wanted to basically let people know and remind them of this, because this is the day. And it's not just a day where Soviets, you know, parade their machinery down Red Square. It's basically a day where Americans died, you know, for a labor movement also.
I'm afraid that's probably one of the reasons it's not linked on this day, because of the old Soviet May Day that went on for
quite a
long time.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
I remember when I was a child, we used to celebrate May Day at school. They'd have a maypole and all that. Anybody remember that? Certainly our younger Listeners don't remember that, but May Day used to be a fun day in grade school. I'm really giving it away there under my age. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. And we're back with the last few minutes of the Guy James Show. About, what do we got? About 8 minutes and 15 seconds to go yet. You still have time to call 866-546-5254. The official Guy James Show puppies just walked into the studio. Kukla and Sophie, the little Yorkies. My, my, my. What fun little dogs they are. I guess we're the only talk show that has our family pets in the studio. It's one of those things they get. Those of you that are animal lovers, I guess you completely understand the unconditional love and just general happiness little animals like that give. Oh, they can be a pain sometimes, but Most of the time, they're a lot of fun, and certainly do enjoy Kukla and Sophie. Ah, yes, our little Yorkie puppies. 866-546-5254. I started to mention before we went to break about don't we get some swell first ladies named Bush. I'm sure you all remember back in 2002 when Barbara Babs, I like to call her, said upon being questioned, I believe it was by Matt Lauer, about what does she think about this war business, you know, in Iraq and all. She says, I watch none. He, speaking of President, former President Bush, sits and listens, and I read books because I know perfectly well that, don't take offense, that 90% of what I hear on television is supposition. When we're talking about the news, and he's not an understanding of my pettiness about that, but why should we hear about body bags and death and how many, what day it's going to happen, and how many this or what do you suppose? Oh, or I mean, it's not relevant. So why should I waste my beautiful mind on something like that? And if that weren't abominable enough, we have the current First Lady of the United States, one Laura Bush, on April 25th this year, made the astonishing statement in speaking about the war. She said, and I quote, "No one suffers more than their president, and I do," end quote. No one, Ms. Bush, no one suffers more than the president and you do about the war? No one? Not any of the soldiers languishing in Walter Reed Hospital or other VA facilities around the country? None of them suffer more than you do? None of the soldiers who have come back alive, maimed for life, mentally or physically? Many of them back home in their communities without jobs, can't get a job because they're suffering the mental horrors of being in this war, and nobody suffers more than the president and you do? The families who have grieved and cried and mourned the loss of their sons and daughters in this war. Thousands of them. And nobody has suffered more than the president and you. It's unthinkable to me that somebody could make a statement like that. And it shows you. It shows you the complete disconnect that this Bush family has from the events of this war and from the suffering of the American people and the Iraqi people. A complete disconnect. They don't get it. No one suffers more than their president and I do. I wonder, has she looked back at this and said, oh, geez, I shouldn't have said that? I would kind of hope that maybe she'd have some realization that that's an awful thing to say. Such a self-serving thing to say. I don't know. I just find it astonishing that she could say something like that and obviously mean it. Good news, recently released conference video collections by the conservative groups where Ann Coulter spoke have omitted her addresses. That's right. Says, has the Republican superstar finally become a pariah for the right? And Daniel Borchers writes, has Ann Coulter reached her tipping point? The question has been repeatedly asked since her latest infamy at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, over March 2nd, and Reclaiming America for Christ Conference, on March 3rd, recent Coulter no-shows at high-profile events, and the scrubbing of several of her recent appearances from the video collections of these conservative events, seems to suggest the Republican superstar could finally be in her, quote, last throes. The tipping point questions begs the fence-sitter answer, when will conservatives make a choice and stand for principles? Are they or are they not Ann Coulter conservatives? If not, why is she still among us at all? My God, a conservative Republican with a conscience writing that. Abhorring the language of one Ann the Man Coulter. First time I've seen somebody really come out and say something like that about Ann the Man. Really. Such a beautiful gal. Tongue firmly implanted in cheek. Well, here we are down at the end of another program. I don't know how we get there so fast every day. The time goes so fast, and we had a lot of material. We're going to have to talk about George Tenet tomorrow. I had somebody from the CIA that was going to be on and talk about it today, but they had to cancel out at the last minute. And we'll get one of them on tomorrow, hopefully, to talk about this whole George Tenet affair. There's a lot to it, really. Again, you know my feelings about it. I mentioned that I think George Tenet's a complete rat for doing this. But as you know, the right wingers, I knew they'd come out with this as well. That's all Bill Clinton's fault. He appointed him. It's blame this whole thing, the damn Iraq war and everything, on Bill Clinton. He's the one that appointed George Tenet. So you knew it would get there. You knew it would get there sooner or later, that this whole mess would be Bill Clinton's fault. The cleanest does it again. Well, thanks so much for being with us here on the Guy James Show today. We sincerely appreciate having each and every one of you with us here on the program on the Head On Radio Network. Look forward to having you with us again tomorrow here on the Guy James Show. And never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. A special thanks to Billy Cheers, music director of The Guy James Show.